culture of think tanks and scientists and others who created, who issued reports and did studies that also spread doubt about climate change. And that provided the fodder for groups, for companies such as Exxon, and also for policymakers to say, look, you know, here are these credible institutions issuing these reports. There is no consensus on climate change, which is what's so unusual or sort of stark about that now that we have these documents is that Exxon in the 80s was talking about a consensus among scientists about climate change and fossil fuels. And, you know, 10, 15, 20 years later, they were saying the exact opposite.
And Garvey, as Exxon started funding these climate denier groups, your thoughts as we wrap up?
I just think it was an opportunity that was missed, that having developed this knowledge in-house, Exxon was in a position to lead the discussion as how to deal with the problem, and instead they really chose to deny the problem. And I think that was really a missed opportunity.
And Neela Banerjee, the chief executives at Exxon who became the climate deniers?
Well, you know, we don't know what their original thinking was, but we do know that Lee Raymond, who became chairman and CEO and made seminal speeches denying climate change, was exposed to thinking about CO2 and how it affected Exxon's business projects, including the decision to delay action on a major gas field that Exxon had picked up the rights to develop in the 1980s. So it wasn't that these men were ignorant of the science, but, you know, what their attitudes were when they were exposed to it, whether there was actually any kind of shift, whether it was natural or calculated, we don't know.
Neela, we want to have to leave it there, but we'll continue the discussion. Neela Banerjee with the Pulitzer Prize-winning Inside Climate News and Ed Garvey. We'll link to your expose at democracynow.org. Of course, we'll continue to cover the Pope's trip through the United States. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today, we'll cover two topics, the state of education for Black youth in Portland and the Jim Pepperfest 2015.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Gaining Ground, a feature-length documentary film by Elaine Velasquez and Barbara Bernstein on Wednesday, September 30th, and Thursday, October 1st at Cinema 21 in Portland. Gaining Ground tells the stories of farmers making extraordinary changes in their farming practice so they can feed their local communities sustainably grown produce and grains. The documentary interweaves experiences of urban farmer activists, large farms in transition, and small family farmers. Again, that's Gaining Ground, Wednesday, September 30th, and Thursday, October 1st, at Cinema 21, 616 Northwest 21st Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival, September 26th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Park Rose High School West Athletic Field in Portland. The Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival remembers and celebrates the art, music, personality, and legacy of the great Kaw Creek musician Jim Pepper. This year's performers include One Heart, featuring Jan Michael Looking Wolf, the Delbert Anderson Trio, Four Directions Drum, Big B, and many more. Again, that's the third annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival, September 26th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at the Park Rose High School West Athletic Field, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the inaugural Portland Youth Poet Laureate Project. On Monday, September 28th at 7 p.m., 12 of Portland's poetry ambassadors will compete to become the Portland Youth Poet Laureate. The event will take place in the Artist Repertory Theater, 1515 Southwest Morrison in Portland. Again, that's Portland Youth Poet Laureate Project. a program of Spit Right, Monday, September 28th at 7 p.m. at the Artist Repertory Theater, 1515 Southwest Morrison in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Good morning, good morning. Welcome to Voices from the Edge. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and it's my pleasure to be here with you today. I am here with Noni Kasi, who runs the Black Student Success Program. I'll let her tell you what it's about. But our conversation today is the state of education for Black youth in Oregon. I want to give you some data before I invite my guests to join the conversation. Want you to know that in Portland Public School, the graduation rate for all students is now at 70%. And so I'm sure if you hear that, you think, you know, that's okay. It's not great, but, you know, that's okay. However, the devil's always in the details. And when you look into the details, what you find is, once again, Portland Public School does a very ineffective job of educating kids of color, low-income kids, and kids with special needs. And don't just take my word for it. Let me give you some data. And so in 2014, 70% of all students graduated. But, you know, you can't just look at that number, because you have to actually look at who are those 70% that graduated. I can tell you that most of them were white. 76% of the students who graduated on time were white. I can tell you that only 61% of students who are classified as low income graduated on time. I can tell you that kids who are classified as special ed, only 50% of those kids graduated on time last year. Latino kids graduated on time at a rate of 56%. If you talk about Black kids, they graduated at a rate of 60%. Asian American kids graduated at a rate of 81%. Native American kids graduated at a rate of 47%. I don't think it's time for Portland Public Schools to be patting themselves on the back just yet about what an effective job they're doing in educating our kids. This is the beginning of a new school year, and we're already hearing rumblings from students that their school experience is not what they had expected. So if you are a student currently in Portland Public School and you want to join the conversation, you can feel free to give us a call at 503-231-8187. I want to thank you very much for joining me, Noni. I know you're getting over a cold, and I hope we can get through this without both of us coughing through the program. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
It is such a pleasure to have you here. And so I just gave you some data, some that probably didn't surprise you at all because of the work that you do.
No. You know, Joanne, it's pretty amazing. I come from Portland. Mm-hmm. My whole life I've been here. I've been part of the education system here. And I started this program because I remember my experience. Mm. I remember my experience. Back in those days, we had a lot of Black teachers. I went to my local school, Humboldt. I went to King Elementary, and I had teachers that looked like me, and a community that loved me and supported me and wanted the best. Mm-hmm. And I remember at the end of fourth grade, going into fifth grade, they said, you're going to go to a better school. Mm-hmm. And when we came back to school, there were lots of buses lined up outside. Mm-hmm. And many of us got on a bus mm-hmm. and took an hour bus ride across town. Mm. And I remember being dumped in a place, even though my parents said it was going to be better for me, mm-hmm. it looked a lot different than I had ever seen in my life.
Right.
And we were there with people who didn't want us there, mm. teachers who I used to be an A student. All of a sudden, I was in special needs. I couldn't figure out why. Mm. And I didn't have words for what was going on.
Right.
And so, and I remember thinking, I wish there were teachers here that looked like me. Mm. I wish somebody understood. So as I grew older, and now then I sent my kids into the Portland Public Schools, who I remember came home and said, Mom, there's no other black kids in school. And I was like, no, couldn't be, right? They were out of Kellogg Middle School. Mm. And I remember the labeling that started to happen. Mm. And they thought my children were gang members. And I thought, my kids? No. And I remember them being chased home by skinheads. And I remember them meeting me at the door saying, maybe they need special needs. Maybe they need extra help. And I thought, this cannot be happening all over again. It happened to me. Now it's happening to my kids. And now I got grandkids that are in the system. And I don't want that to happen to them. So I started an organization called BEAM. Stands for the Black Educational Achievement Movement. And it's a program because I worked at Portland Community College. And I would watch our black students spend 4 to 5 years trying to get a 2-year degree. And they would be racking up debt. And often they would give up before they could transfer over to a PSU. So we thought, let's provide some opportunities for them to just come and talk about what's going on and actually get to see, bring in community and see people that look like them to help them be successful. And it was an amazing, amazing program. And in 2014, we launched the first Black Student Success Summit. And we had community members and faculty and educators and
people came from throughout Oregon to participate.
Yes, all
actually
over
not
the
even
state.
Just Oregon, it was out of the state as well.
Out of the state, we had over 200 African-American students, and we had community members and employers and colleges, and we all came together for one day just to say we could do this. That's came to rally around our students to say, I'm here for you. Whatever it is you need, let me help open up the door to success. It was an amazing experience. And some things happened after that, and I actually left PCC and started my own nonprofit because I knew that we needed this to continue on. And there were a lot of changes going on at the college. And so we hosted our second Student Success Summit last year at Portland State University. We had over 300 students that came from all throughout the state of Oregon. And it was led by 65 black professionals that came from STEMs and healthcare and construction, the trades, all over. And we had 25 workshops, and they talked about everything from navigating the higher education system to how to survive in a predominantly white institution, and actually how to set the bar for yourself to be higher, to be more, to be better. And this year is going to be held March 5th, 2016, back at Portland State University. And we're looking for 500 students this time.
Wow.
Yes, I'm very, very excited.
Very nice. And so when you hear this, the data about how many of our kids are being left behind, and not just when I say our kids, all the kids are our kids, but I'm talking specifically when you think about what's happening with the Latino youth, black youth, Native American youth. I mean, that's just criminal. I can't imagine any other group of people that if we were graduating 47% of their kids, that there wouldn't be outrage in the street.
I think it would be a national crisis. And I often say that when I sit in meetings and, you know, I hear that it's just going to take a little bit more time. We're really making progress. You know, I think this has been decades now.
How many generations, right?
Absolutely.
Are going to have to wait. And so it's so wonderful to hear that your program came out of a need that you identified when you were a student, a parent, and now as a grandparent. I just want to say that last year when I attended the Black Student Success Summit, it was absolutely phenomenal to see that many people volunteer their time all day on a Saturday to be there for black youth. And there were smiles all everywhere. And so it was such a thrilling experience. We have a caller on the line. Let me find out if that's a student. Oh, good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Hello?
Hi, good morning.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if my problem is a problem in the black community, but I see myself as a voice. I hope I don't start crying. A voice crying out in the wilderness that people don't want to hear. Mm. But here goes. Oregon and Portland have helped a lot of small businesses of all kinds, including the new wine industry, the new beer industry, the hard liquor, new hard liquor industry, and even built a bridge in Portland recently.
Right.
Now, I'd like to know, these people that run and control the education system in Oregon and Portland, why can't they open their minds and spirit to people like my granddaughter, who's disabled, who dropped out of middle school because of bullying and that, and never went back? Hmm. Why can't they open up their minds and spirit to create a program for these children that dropped out and never gone back? Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Joanne. I think you raise an excellent point. Right. We have lots of brand new industries that are supposedly creating opportunities here, but a lot of people are being left out of those opportunities. I couldn't agree with you more. What I find interesting is what schools are doing, like, really horrible when it comes to educating our kids. And Roosevelt is at the very bottom of the list. They only graduate on time, 53% of their student population. Jefferson is at the next bottom, with only graduating 66% of their students. But somehow Lincoln's able to graduate 91%. Cleveland's able to graduate 83%. Benson's able to graduate 85%. If this data, and this data hasn't really moved much over the last decade. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it's pretty appalling that that this is like the norm, right? We keep having conversations about courageous conversations at Portland Public School. We've spent mm-hmm. millions on courageous conversations. Let's have a courageous conversation about the failure of our education system to actually educate all the children that come through their doors. And so I am so thrilled that we have a program like Black Student Success, because without it, this would look a lot worse than it already looks. And it looks pretty bad right now.
Absolutely, Joanne. You know, when I sit at these tables and we keep talking about it's going to take time, I often wonder, why is that? Right. I look at the over-discipline rate. You know, you can just look right here. I was happening to be looking through the Urban League's
State of Black Oregon.
Mm-hmm. And I'm really, really still concerned. So it talks about ending the zero tolerance policy around discipline.
Right.
Well, I was in a meeting and I was understanding this House Bill 3553, and it dealt with that specific issue about the discipline. And it said that you couldn't suspend or expel students that were fifth grade and below.
Right. Duh.
We needed a law for that. Absolutely, because it was happening to the law came because it was a real, real concern for students of color. However, I was so excited to see that happen. I thought they were going to come up with a new discipline policy. Right. And I know that Portland Parent Union is pushing for that. And, right. and that Sheila's been on the front lines, her and her organization.
Right.
And then I sat in the meeting and someone said, oh, but 554 didn't pass. And I was like, what is that?
Right.
And they were like, well, that was the funding to support 553. And I thought, so you need funding to rewrite a discipline
right.
program, and you need funding to teach your teachers not to, you know, suspend.
Over-discipline, right, over-discipline black and brown children?
Yes, and
So 553 was a bill that said that you needed to revise your discipline practices so that you created equity around who was suspended and who wasn't and expelled. Yes. 554 was a funding mechanism for what? I mean, it's like, don't you just say to, doesn't the principal just say to the teachers, hey, look, this law passed, which means that they're going to be really watching who we suspend and expel, and you need to stop doing that?
Well, in the meeting, he said it was very, very complicated, and that
it's not that complicated.
Well, you know. That's what I said. But, you know, he said there's the teachers union, there's all these different entities that have to come together to look at the discipline policy to, you know, because kids can be threatening. And I thought,
well,
wow.
I'm going to leave it there because I was about to go a place that I don't normally go on the radio. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Michael. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanna.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. You know, a couple of things. First of all, black kids, in order to get an education or get help in schools, they have to be classified as having a learning disability. Then they end up getting some federal money come in, and that's how they get their help. And also, too, you have to understand that industries, and I know you understand this, industries determine what is being taught in schools. And so with jobs being outsourced to other countries,
right,
the paradigm now for educating Americans have changed. They don't need a real educated workforce because India and China and all them places, that's where your jobs are, your good jobs.
Right.
So, you know, so that has changed because in the past, all black people or most people were just functional illiterates. They just, that's all they needed. But one last thing, you know, and now immigration is impacting at least black people. Mm-hmm. I'm concerned about black people. I'm not really addressing other issues. And I think what's happening is that, like the 14th Amendment, Mexicans now, or immigrants are coming over here, and they're being now allowed to stay in America for a law that was passed to benefit children of ex-slaves. That's how that 14th Amendment got into play, where if you was born here, you're citizens, and that was designed for children of slaves.
Hmm.
Now the Mexicans are taking advantage of it. And also, they're going to get, I mean, it's only so much pie that you can split. And so the Mexicans, the immigrants come over, they're taking a lot of stuff from black people, and they're utilizing the efforts and the struggles that black people have went through and made advances. The Mexicans just come on in, and they get to benefit from that. And I don't like that. They get the jobs. You can't even see black kids that are working at McDonald's no more. All the Mexicans got them. And Mexicans are not coming over here to pick berries and beans.
So, wait, Michael. I know that you're passionate about this, but I want you to know that people who immigrate to this country don't come owning businesses. They don't come owning property. Mm-hmm. They don't come with a lot of resources. They are not the decision makers, mm-hmm, about who gets hired. They're not the decision makers about how much people get paid. And I agree with you that jobs that used to employ low-skilled black people now are only being filled by recent immigrants to the country. And it is not because of the people. It is because those companies understand that they can exploit people, mm-hmm, who are brand new to the country a lot easier and faster than they can people who are born and bred here. And so I know you're passionate, but I just don't want to let that go unchallenged. And so I appreciate your passion. I understand why you feel the way you do, but don't put it on the back of immigrants. Everybody's trying to look for a better life for themselves. And it's our job to make sure that everybody has that opportunity. So what we're talking about today is how we are not giving opportunity to black youth to be all they can be. And then it's acceptable. It's the norm in our education system that you graduate 50% of the kids. I mean, to me, that's the problem. So I appreciate your call, and you have a good day. Okay, so I want to get back, Noni, to this whole 553 bill. And, you know, the legislature loves playing games like that. They love they love having one bill that does something and then having a funding bill that's separate and then somehow pretending the two aren't connected, right? But yet, I bet you that there will be legislators running for re-election saying, we passed legislation to make sure that there was equity and discipline in the school systems throughout Oregon. I bet you money they will be saying that. And then when you say, oh, and was it funded? They'll give you the old passport look.
Oh, wow. Well, politics are very new to me. And, you know, actually, there's some of us that are just on the ground. We just want to do the work. Right. We want to make sure that all of our children have an equitable education.
Yes.
And so, you know, and I sit, like, one more time, I sit in these meetings and I hear, so there's this House bill, I think it's 2655, and it's going to go into effect in January, and it talks about opting out of standardized testing and this new Smarter Balance testing that comes. And right. So I actually had a conversation with teachers union president, and you know, I understand that teachers are overloaded, they're overworked, you know. Absolutely, and I love teachers. Let's put that on record, you know, that
right, Noni Kazi. I'll get the calls, right? Right. I can't believe you let her trash teachers.
That's right. Absolutely. My niece is a teacher. My neighbor is a teacher. I love teachers. Right. However, I raised a concern about our parents opting out of standardized testing. Now, we all know that standardized testing isn't fair,
right,
that all kids don't do equally on these tests.
Right.
However, it does give us a benchmark on where the achievement gap is,
right?
So,
well, and it's kind of funny. It's actually an education gap. It's not an achievement gap, right? It amazes me that somehow we put the blame on youth that they somehow aren't living up to expectations, where it's really just the opposite. It's an education gap.
Absolutely.
That you have educators who aren't filling the gap to ensure that those kids are successful. And so I wish we would stop talking about this achievement gap, because the kids are achieving just as intended, right?
Ooh, absolutely. I remember someone said that this system is doing exactly what it's designed to do.
Yes, it is. We have another caller on the line we're going to try to get in. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, good morning, you guys. So, listen, my comment goes like this, and, you know, we've fooled around with this education system for years.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I mean, maybe unbeknownst to the United States of America that other countries have progressed and are graduating a large percentage of their population.
Yes, yes.
Placing other people. And as I suggested a couple years ago, that, you know, maybe with our police system, we should get some input from other places, and we found that input through the Chicago Police Department. You know, so, well, I mean, that wasn't my suggestion.
Right. You mean you weren't champion us hiring somebody from Chicago to help us out?
We might have them now, but we don't need black sites like Chicago Police.
Right.
And I'm not talking about racial black.
No, I know.
But the bottom line, you know, I have two comments. If this is not working, and there are, you know, education is not, this is not 1950. We know what it takes to educate somebody.
That's right.
And we are not, and the bottom line goes, the people who are in charge of education, not the teachers who are being overworked.
That's right.
But we have people who are now know how to, quote, run a business.
Right.
CEOs running our education system. Well, then they are responsible, and unfortunately, and we will not hold them to the fire. And
no, we won't.
Prosecute them when they do not do their job.
And this is what appalls me. I mean, I don't know where else a 60% or 48% graduation rate would be norm. And nobody, there wouldn't be outrage. It wouldn't be people marching in the street. Wouldn't be people demanding the head of the superintendent.
Yes.
Right? I mean, and what other reality is, would this be like just as it is here?
It's
just,
I mean, you know,
it's the norm.
The CEO from Volkswagen, you know, who just faked everything.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, he resigned. Hopefully he'll be, you know, in Germany or somewhere, he'll be arrested for fraud. This is basically what's being perpetrated.
Yes.
On our
children.
People in the United States, yes. Is mass, mm-hmm, fraud.
Absolutely true. By the way, he did get a $32 million parachute, so he's not going to be in pain.
So, you know what? I mean, some systems around the world tend to take that money away from them. So, you know, hopefully that'll happen when he flies over the Mediterranean.
Hopefully. Did you have another point?
Yeah, George W. can't leave the country because he might get arrested.
Did you have another point?
I have one more point, and the bottom line goes like this: you really have to look at the, I don't know how to put it, and I'm not being patronizing here, but everything that African American Black people have to go through, anybody of color in this country, especially African Americans, just to get up in the morning and go to school, and make sure they come home alive,
yes,
mm-hmm, still sound. And they can still graduate at this rate is really amazing.
You know, thank you. We forget sometimes how impressive it is and how resilient, mm-hmm, a community can be. And I appreciate you acknowledging that, because we forget, right? The fact that, you know, 50% of kids are graduating on time in spite of the challenges that they're facing is pretty phenomenal, right?
I'd like to suggest a study to the education department in Oregon, is that we just go ahead and start treating white people like we treat Black people and see,
ooh,
how they do in school.
Ooh.
Ouch.
Just maybe 6 months.
Hey, just for 6 months. Yeah, I don't think they could take it longer than 6 months.
And listen, you guys, and great work.
Thank you.
And
thank
this you. Work, unfortunately, we should be long past at this point.
You know, you would think we would be, but I think we've learned a valuable lesson, right?
Yes.
Rights that we fight for are never permanent, right? And if we're not paying attention, they start slipping away.
Yes.
Have a great day.
Take care.
You too. What's coming up today on The Boo? At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, San Francisco's progressive sheriff, you don't see those two words together too often, talks about gentrification and class division in the city and his work around early prison releases and creating support networks for ex-offenders. Can we get him? Can we just steal him from San Francisco?
All right.
Want to thank you all for supporting our recent membership drive. You guys were absolutely fabulous. And if you missed it, don't worry about it. You still have an opportunity to become a member. All you have to do is go to kboo.fm, click the tip jar, and it happens just that simply. And so we, I believe, are going to be wrapping up this program in a little bit, because we're going to be talking a little bit about the Jim Pepper Fest later, but I don't think they've arrived yet, so we will just keep talking until they get here. But one thing I wanted to, mm-hmm, find out, I want you to give the date again for March of next year.
Yes. So the Black Student Success Summit is coming up again, mm-hmm, March the 5th, 2016. We'll be at Portland State University this year. We are looking for African-American students all around the state of Oregon. This is not just a Portland thing. We want to reach wide and deep. There are pockets of Black students all around the state, mm-hmm, that need support.
Yes.
And, you know, people have said, well, Noni, well, don't you think this is a little racist? And I'm like, wow, everybody needs support. Right. And
well, if you look at the outcomes of our current education system, how would anybody ask if this is racist?
Oh my goodness, Joanne, you just don't know. And I have
a website, don't you?
Absolutely, www.beamvillage.org. That's BEAM, beamvillage.org.
Excellent.
And it talks all about the summit and other post-summit activities that we do to keep students engaged. This summit is just once a year. In January, we will launch a middle school summit,
nice,
for middle school students and their parents.
Wonderful.
Because we want to reach students a lot earlier.
Yes.
We want students to know that you could be whatever you want to be. And
right,
the good part about bringing in community from all over, you know, we have an FBI agent.
Mm-hmm.
And it other little young girls need to see her.
Yes.
We have doctors and lawyers, yes, and just from every industry, and our kids need to see people that look like them, yes, that are successful, to know we have a black wine grower, yes, here in Oregon. And one of the things we're trying to do is get him to come so we can highlight the Chemeketa program down there. And we want kids to know you can grow wine, you can be whatever you want to be. Right. But until they see that, yes, how do you know that?
That's right.
And that's one thing we haven't been really good at, in my opinion, mm-hmm, my humble opinion here, is that we don't, there's not enough programs that put our professionals in front of our kids.
Right, that's right.
Yes.
Well, right, because if they're not the teachers, right, if they're not seeing people that look like them walking the halls of the schools that they're in.
Other than janitors and...
And front desk people, maybe.
Oh, yes, and security guards.
And security. And please, let me... again, I mean, you know, let me just say that it is a bad decision to put police in schools, period. Period. Mm. Period. There is no, because anytime you have police in the schools, any activity becomes criminal behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You have a police response to juvenile behavior. If kids, yes, can't learn in school, if kids can't act out in school, under conditions where you have loving adults who, yes, are there to help shape them into the adults they will become.
Learning, yes.
Yes, right? But no, our response is we have police in the school, so let's use the police rather than you be adult. I mean, there's no place I can be and not be able to have an impact on a child.
That's right. Absolutely.
As an adult in the community. I mean, mm-hmm, it's hysterical. On the buses, I'll walk up to the girls that are just talking at the top of their,
yes,
voice. And all you have to do is go, hey, baby, how you doing?
That's it.
And tell your mama I said hi.
There's never been a time, Joanne,
never,
that I've been able to, you know, people talk about kids and they're sagging and the way they talk. And yeah, kids are a little different. But I remember in my generation, it was something else.
Yes.
And there's never been a time that I haven't just spoken to a child. And usually 9 times out of 10, they'll say, oh, okay, yes, ma'am. And I would say, like, right, do you kiss your grandma with that mouth? Like, right, is that okay to talk like,
yeah, right,
that?
Right, right.
You know, I think we've become afraid of our children.
Yes,
I think,
yes,
the media,
yes,
hypes this up, and,
yes,
it's us against them, and these kids look, yes, like they're this, they're gang members, they're,
yes,
drug dealers, they're,
right,
this. So we become afraid of our own children.
That's absolutely,
and that,
true,
is so sad to me.
It is absolutely true. If you have just joined in the conversation, I am talking to Noni Cassie. She runs a program called the Black Student Success Summit. Mm-hmm. The next one will be taking place in March 5th, 2016. And it will be taking place at Portland State University.
Yes.
And I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to Cable.
Hi, Joanne. Hi, Noni.
Hi.
I'm a white family man. I live out kind of in a rural area. My, mm-hmm, kids just actually entered public school for the first time this year.
Ah.
And there's a lot of, it's a really, because it's, you know, community oriented, and there's a lot of parent involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting ready to sign these volunteer forms so I can volunteer at my kids' schools. And,
great,
wonderful. And I was just wondering, you know, I'm thinking outside the box, and I'm wondering what if there was like a volunteer program where, like, sure, like if you're volunteering for school, you should be working with other schools and vice versa. That's my question.
Can you repeat the question?
Yes. So what if my volunteer form, if I volunteered to my time instead of volunteering for my kids' school, if I volunteered for your kids' school?
Oh, right, right. Very cool.
I think that's possible.
I think that's absolutely possible.
I think once you get approved, and I'm not in a school district, so I really don't know, but I'm assuming once you're cleared to volunteer in one school district, I'm quite sure that you can volunteer
in others.
Yeah. And I believe schools are always looking for good people to volunteer.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I often think, and I'm glad you brought that point up. Someone had asked me a question about black fathers and why they weren't in the school system volunteering.
Right.
And the question had come up. It's not that young men don't want to volunteer. Sometimes they can't volunteer because of either past records or something like that, mm-hmm. and not feeling welcome in the school system. And so we did a focus group about 2 years ago, and with black dads, and they were like, absolutely, we want to be there with our children. And it's the way that we're looked at, it's the way that we're viewed. You know, some of them that had records from back in when they were juveniles, like that came up, and they were made to feel so alienated,
mm-hmm.
that they were like, why, you know, like, why would we do that?
Not to mention their own experience with the public
absolutely.
Education system.
Absolutely.
Right?
And that's what I tell people. Like, mm-hmm. you know, we often, sometimes we look at parents and say, well, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. And I say, you have to remember, these people came out of the same system that harmed them also. So we have to teach parents
yes.
how to have a voice, how to be able to go in an IEP meeting. You know, mm-hmm. I've gone to IEP meetings and there's like 10 adults there, you know, that don't look like me, and they got masters and doctors, and they're
yeah.
talking all this, you know, all this medical terminology and school terminology. Like, that's pretty intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about not going alone and taking other folks with you.
Mm-hmm.
I love Portland Parent Union. They do that. They go with you out to these meetings. And I've tried to go through a few, and personally, Joanne, it just ruffles my feathers.
Yeah, I it's been a while since I've interacted with the public school, but I know exactly what you mean, because I've had to go myself and be an
mm-hmm.
advocate for
yes.
Students that I knew, right?
Yes.
So I know. And thank you, A, for volunteering.
Yes.
B, I want to thank you for understanding that maybe the best gift you can give is to volunteer outside of your local community, because
mm-hmm.
there's an opportunity to build relationships, and there's an opportunity to see and interact with people that, you know, are different from the community that you were in, the rural community that you were in. So thank you. I mean, I do think that that's the kind of out of the box thinking
yes.
that we need more people to be doing. Okay, just keep her on hold. So thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. And so again, I want to thank you for the work that you're doing around Black student success. I think we need so much more, because again, when we look at graduation rates that are as horribly bad as we see at the high school that has the most African Americans
mm-hmm.
in it, which is Jefferson High School, so the graduation rate being 66%, and we didn't even talk about how kids are being pushed off into alternative schools. And so if you think 66% mm-hmm. is bad, you don't know what the total numbers are
mm-hmm.
who have been pushed out to alternative schools, even though Portland Public Schools still gets money from those students. Those kids are not even counted in their numbers. And so I would like to see an audit of all education in the city of Portland, so that we don't get the skewed numbers that
yes.
are just based on what the school district would like us to know about what's going on. And thank
mm-hmm.
you so much for the work that you do.
Thank you, Joanne.
And so you were talking, though, a little bit earlier about a committee that you were working on that is, talk. Is this the committee that's the statewide committee that's looking at?
Well,
which one?
Well, I'm hoping that I'm going to, are you talking about the African-American student success plan that Oregon Department of Education has just implemented?
Yes, that is what I'm talking about.
Well, I had been invited to that committee. However, I haven't received the formal invitation just yet. I'm really hoping to come to the table. Often, Joanne, I look around and first of all, I think there's amazing, amazing agencies that we have here that are doing amazing work. So I don't ever want to discount that. However, if we look at these numbers, they haven't changed, like you said, in decades.
Right.
So I'm really hoping that we can do some out-of-the-box, different types of things. ODE had been very supportive of this effort over the last couple years. They've had staff involved in the summit. They've given, when Rob Saxton was there, they've given financial contributions. The liaison that had been working with me called and said, well, we can't support this year. And I was like, I was a little confused because that was one of the reasons we continued to work. And they said, well, there's this new committee that's being formed and there's going to be dollars attached to that. And when we look at that, it looks like those funds are available in April. And our summit is in March. So, you know, we're on the ground. We're out raising money. We don't want to put the financial burden on a student.
No.
We want students to be able to come to this free of charge, have lunch, have breakfast, and mingle, network, and get some learning opportunities. So actually, if you go to our website, beamvillage.org, there's a place where you can donate to help a student make it here. And I just think ODE, I don't know, I think resources are limited, and I'm just hoping that they'll continue to support in other ways.
I agree. Resources are limited. However, you have to look at outcomes, right? And if you have been failing a group of students for decades, you would think that with all this talk about equity, if you've been failing a certain population, then you need to invest in that population. You can't just, pretend that somehow, and I love, you know, I say this in jest, I don't love it, I hate this actually, that Oregon is really famous for having a black something. Right. And if they've got that one black something, that they don't have to do anything else for the black population, because after all, we funded that one black thing. Right. And so it is so disrespectful, so annoying.
Yes.
When you hear this from public entities. Oh, well, we funded this black program. So we took care of black people. Right.
Absolutely.
As if any one program would serve an entire population.
Absolutely.
I find just absolutely insulting. And so one other thing I want to go back to, because we only talked about it briefly, is the testing.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of controversy around the testing. And as you mentioned, we know that the tests aren't culturally competent.
Yes.
We know that the tests are developed for a white middle class mindset. We know that about testing. However, if you don't test, then you don't know whether or not you've been successful at imparting information to the person that's supposedly receiving it. What I heard recently was there was a move on to lessen the standard. So all of us, you know, 2 years ago, we had a governor going around the state saying education is going to be key. We're going to have the toughest standards in the nation. We're going to make sure that our kids are successful. And now what we hear is, they did really, 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 really bad on the test. So let's just not do the test, right? Rather than, let's do some analysis to figure out why our kids are doing so bad on these testing, and then figure out how we develop a curriculum that actually supports them gaining that knowledge.
Absolutely. And Joanne, I believe that there's so many smart people in this state. There just are, and that sit at the tables. And I believe that we know what works. I think sometimes it is so much easier to do the easier, softer way, and to continue to do education the way that we've been doing it.
Right.
But there's programs all around this country that are out of the box, and they're successfully graduating kids, and kids are just doing phenomenal things.
Right.
And often I think that Oregon, we just do the same thing and expect different results.
Yes, yes, yes. The definition of insanity.
Absolutely.
I bet there's at least one or two callers that are holding that are called in for you. Hello, James. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, good morning. Yeah, you know, I mean, this is great. I mean, I guess the one thing that frustrates me about this whole thing is it's like people don't recognize that there's a pattern of disenfranchisement.
Yes.
I mean, not just in education, but in housing. I was talking to Joanne a few weeks ago about how back in the day, you know, the banks wouldn't even give a home loan to anybody in the old North Hood. Williams neighborhood.
Yes, absolutely.
And now you can buy a house for $750,000.
Oh no, that's the condo. You can't get a house for that. You can get a condo for that though.
Yeah, but I mean the point is that, you know, you're exactly right. We need to be investing.
Yes.
And not just we can find ways that aren't investing with just money. I mean, we need successful people of color communities. You know, I'm Hispanic.
Yes.
But I mean, people of color to come out and to show these kids how to be successful and how to be, and not just successful, but how to be resilient.
Yes.
Because that's what a lot of our kids are lacking today.
Yes.
With all this instantaneous information, being able to Google what you want.
Yes.
Most kids won't even know what the Dewey Decimal System is.
That's
or
right.
How to
or
look
their
up
time
a book
tables.
At the library. You know,
kids,
we need folks to show kids how to be resilient, how to really stick it out.
We have
children in our community who are talented beyond compare. Some of our own greatest aspirations, but we just don't have somebody sitting down with them and saying, look, this is what you need to do to get it done.
That's right.
And I'm so excited to hear about this program. That's exactly what we need. I mean, we, it's like Viola Davis said in her speech, it's like the only thing that separates people of color and white people is opportunity.
Yes.
Opportunity.
She was eloquent, wasn't she?
Oh, she was beautiful. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. That was
amazing.
And plus, I like the show, too. That's another story.
Somebody said the only thing that would have made that moment even better is if a hologram of Harriet Tubman had presented that award. I was like, wouldn't that be great? I mean, you can already get Tupac on hologram and Aaliyah on hologram. Why not Harriet Tubman?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much for your call.
Yes.
And thank you for your energy. I can just feel how excited you are about what we're talking about.
Well, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, I've told you several times. I mean, I'm a guitar teacher. I teach the blues. And I use my platform as a place to teach about the historical significance of the disenfranchisement of people of color. You know,
right.
The reason why we have the blues is because black folks were disenfranchised. So, I told somebody the other night, you know, you need to thank some of those old black folks for the ability to be able to sit through 3 hours of a crappy blues jam so you can sit up and play for 50 minutes. You know?
You got that right.
You know, you better recognize.
Thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
That's amazing, Joanne, that he was talking about a platform, you know, and that's it. Like, you know, the Black Student Success Summit is just my platform, right? Like, people do different things. This is the way that I thought would be great. So if, like he said, we need people to come out, to get in front of our young people, to say, this is who I am, and this is how you can become who I am in the next 10 years. If you follow this path, if you go to this school, if you take these classes, it's just an opportunity for us to come together, kids to see us. I always say that I'm looking for my replacement. I'm always looking over my shoulder. I want to retire in the next 5 years, get a bigger RV, and go camping with my grandkids. That's what I want to do, right? But to do that, I need another young me coming up right behind me.
That's right.
And it's my responsibility to find her, to groom her, and to educate her, and to doing the same work that I'm doing.
That's right.
So, you know, I ask anyone that wants to volunteer, please hit me up by email. I'm noni@beamvillage.org. Noni, N-O-N-I, @beamvillage.org.
I want to thank you so much for being here today. This has been absolutely wonderful. I really appreciate you coming in and talking to us.
I really appreciate
the opportunity to learn more about the Black Student Summit. All right.
And we will continue this conversation. This is only not the first or the last time we'll have this conversation.
All right. Thank you so much, Joanne. You guys have a wonderful day.
You do the
same. And I hope I didn't say anything too racy about our school system. I believe that we're doing the best we can, but I believe we can always do better.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye now. And we're going to shift gears and we're going to move into, I know you all know that this is happening this Saturday, the Jim Pepperfest Festival here in Oregon at Park Rose High School. It starts on Saturday. It will go from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. KBOO is, in fact, a sponsor of this event, and we are excited that once again we're going to be able to enjoy this fabulous music. And I've just been joined in the studio by another fabulous musician. Would you be kind enough to introduce yourself to my audience?
My name is Avacha. I'm very honored to be here.
We are honored to have you here.
We tried. The traffic was crazy.
Is that what was happening this morning? Well, I am so glad that you made it. But yes, this is the new Portland, Oregon. We get a little traffic jammy. And you are here and you are going to be performing on Saturday. And you bought a book of poetry?
Oh, yeah, several books, but this is, I've written a book of poetry. I have short stories.
Oh, very cool. Would you like to share one with us?
Okie doke, sure. let's see. How short? What do you want?
How about a short one? Because we've got not a lot of time.
Okay.
But I want to give people kind of a taste.
A very short one.
A very short one would be great.
The titled poem from the book is called With Every Step I Take. My feet stand in dreams, run circles around the lakes, and my mind climb tropical hillsides inside forests hidden behind the tenements and dance all sweaty. A passionate urban exorcism wrapped in cortijo magic, my feet swim through concrete and drink the wind. They sing low-down blues tunes and pray with jazz bands. My feet are poems. Every inch on my road a chant, a sacred inspiration, a song. And with every step I take, I create and create and create.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
I love that. Oh, so Sean didn't tell me that you were a poet as well. I knew you were a musician. Tell our audience a little bit about you.
Well, let's see. I've been playing music since I was 4. I'm 74. And I'm still playing music and doing poetry and writing, and that's what I do. I'm kind of fanatical. And when you become fanatical, that's pretty much it.
I can appreciate that. Sean, so tell us a little bit about what people can expect on Saturday.
Oh, this is the Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival, and it's free.
The third annual?
Yeah, third time. And we're really thrilled to have Avacha here from San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I met her in the Jim Pepper tribute in San Francisco in March, and she electrified the room. Yes, she did with her poem for Jim Pepper.
I feel the power.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And so you will be... Do you sing or
sometimes?
So you're just a well-rounded musician, are you?
No, as I said, fanatic. I get high on B flat to high C, and that's my life. And I'll be working with some amazing these young Navajo jazz musicians from New Mexico that I'm very honored to be with. Delbert, if you're listening, I'm talking about you.
All right. Uh-huh. That's the thing I love about the Jim Pepper Fest is the camaraderie among the musicians, and then people meet and it's like it's family. You know, you become family in 2 minutes.
That's right.
So again, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m.
That's right.
Park Rose High School.
Free.
Free, open to the public, all ages.
Yeah.
You'll have information booths. You'll have music playing all day. What else is going on?
Native food, fry bread.
Oh, native food.
All day. And direct service, but TriMet number 22 and 12.
All right. Got that down packed. And what can people expect when they come out to see you on Saturday?
71. I'm sorry, 71. There's the number 71.
Oh, 71. Okay. I was like, what?
Well, of course, the poem that I wrote for Jim Pepper, but it's for me, it's music and the arts is a healer. That's a wonderful, I think he's from Iran. It says, music appears and oceans disappear, and there's going to be magic that happens there. It's Jim, for those folks who don't know, and unfortunately, most folks don't know. I mean, mm-hmm. I lived in Europe for a while, and Jim's name was like a household name.
Oh,
he was born here in Oregon, right, and right. No folks don't know about him, which is a real travesty. Mm-hmm. Racism has taken its toll, but he was one of the greatest musicians. I mean, a Coltrane quality musician.
All
that
right,
everybody should know about.
We're going to have to end it on that note. The program is over. Hopefully, we'll see you all on Saturday at the Jim Pepper Fest, the third annual Jim Pepper Fest Festival at Park Rose High School. This has been Joanne Hardy. See you next week, same time, same place. Have a great day. Thanks, Steve, my extraordinary engineer. Have a great day, folks.
What life is really worth is an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told, so now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station, just about 9 o'clock on this Thursday morning. Coming up in 1 hour, it'll be Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15 today, it's Flashpoints. San Francisco Progressive Sheriff Ross Mercarimi talks about gentrification and class division in the city and his work around early prison release and creating support networks for ex-offenders. And author Jorge Cervantes talks about his cannabis encyclopedias. At 11 on Between the Covers, host David Naiman talks with Portland writer, teacher, and editor Liz Prado about her debut collection of stories, Babies on Fire. And at 11:30, the film show checks out what's going on in Central Oregon at the Bend Film Festival with director Todd Luby. Then Don Smallman tells us about the Portland Eco Film Festival, which is kicking off with an outdoor screening and kayak event on the Willamette River at Portland's Selwood Park. That is all coming up this morning, but up next, it's an hour-long press watch with Teresa Mitchell hosting and giving you the news you're not supposed to know. Stay with us. That is next on KBOO.